for another episode of No Flicks Given. And this week, it's going to be Matt's turn to pick, who I'm pretty sure he just learned he is supposed to pick a movie for this episode. So do you have one or you're still looking?
I choose Vincent Minnelli's The Pirate.
What?
No.
I don't know that.
No. Wait.
Is this a real thing?
Yeah, it's a real thing. Judy Garland?
Wait, oh, I was thinking of Roman Polanski's Pirates. I was thinking of the Walter Matthau Pirate.
1948, Judy Garland, Gene Kelly, American musical film, produced by MGM, The Pirate. Yes.
If there was a color wheel where Death Machine is on one side of it, Matt is like, what is the I can't think of what
the chromatic the chromatic opposite.
Yes. The Pirate. How can we watch it?
Well, I have it on Blu-ray, so I don't know.
Y'all are fucked.
I am sure it is on the Blockbusters of the internet, but let me check real quick.
Is this in the Criterion Collection?
I don't know.
Better be. Ooh. Making us watch it.
Music by Cole Porter, so I'm in.
Yeah.
Oh, this is definitely a Up in the Mountains watching on your VHS. Oh,
I'm so glad we're not watching Roman Polanski's Pirates.
We're not going to do a Roman Polanski movie on this fucking show.
It's on TCM streaming.
That tracks.
TCM streaming?
You can rent it on Amazon. You can rent it on iTunes.
All right.
So it's available on the Blockbusters of the internet. And TCM,
I have not seen it. I'm excited.
Anything we should know going into this, Matt?
I obviously have seen it, but this was an old favorite of mine that I watched when I was in film school.
Ooh,
excellent!
Are there any?
So there's a story behind that whole thing, but I don't know.
I'm including this in my film school class. I like this.
All right,
this is fun. Great.
Are there any really jarring character backstories you should warn us about before we?
Frank, that was last week. We've put that all in the past.
I'm talking
there
about
there are
with my
no garbage
tomorrow,
disposals so. In the 40s or really in the time that the pirate actually takes place in. Oh, so I think we're God. Safe.
Hey, let's put in the tape.
Okay. Great.
The pirate.
Say, gentlemen, Gene Kelly's ass is a national treasure, and there needs to be a cast of it in the fucking Smithsonian.
We don't talk about this enough because I realized.
I'm
the
glad
same
we
thing.
All are talking about it now because I thought that
I
was
mean,
just.
It, it doesn't oh, I got his ass. It's his whole legs.
Here's one of the reason why the pirate stuck in my mind from when I saw it first in undergrad is. I had a borderline sexual awakening watching Gene Kelly dance during that like fever dream sequence where I was like, I'm usually not into this, but this is kind of turning me on. And like, that was just what it was. And like, it stayed in my brain forever and ever. And coming back, it's like, I can't stop staring at this man's ass.
I don't know if the other three of us are remotely qualified to peel this particular onion, but...
We'll send you a bill, Matt.
For the sake of comedy.
That's the thing I didn't know about. I didn't know about you, Matt, and thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
I love how we didn't have to wear him down and lower his guard.
He came in hot with that. I am pretty comfortable with my sexuality. I know where I stand. When I see a very, very attractive man, I will point that out.
Kinsey scale.
All right, so there's a bunch of things I want to say, and I'll sprinkle them throughout, and they're all hot takes and somewhat controversial. And here's kind of the first one that I didn't really realize about me. I don't know if I've really seen a Gene Kelly movie.
Interesting,
because in my brain, I was picturing
Fred Astaire.
White Christmas.
Who's
not Bing? Bing, not Danny Crosby. Bing Crosby? Really?
That's the face. I know who Bing Crosby is, and I've seen plenty of his movies. But when I think Gene Kelly, my brain pictures a Bing Crosby.
Have you seen
figure.
Singing in the Rain?
And I have seen clips of it, but like in school in the day. I really don't think I've actually sat down with a Gene Kelly movie. So, so when he shows up, I was like, that guy looks like he'd be the lead, but I don't recognize him, so it can't be him. And I was just like waiting around. I'm like, fuck, I think I don't know who Gene Kelly is. And like, this is a like the first time really sitting down and seeing a Gene Kelly movie. I'm sure I've seen clips, but like how many 1940s white male dancers do I have to keep track of?
I mean, just two, really. Fred Astaire and Gene
Kelly. Yeah, really, just two.
I'd throw Danny Kaye in there.
Yeah, that's
Danny Kaye for sure. That Danny Kaye's a badass.
Danny Kaye's more of a looking at like the iceberg of it. It's like Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire up at the very top, and then Danny Kaye's like a little bit towards the waterline.
Yeah, Danny Kaye is definitely B team, but he's still pretty fucking great.
Yeah, he's the Hawkeye.
Well, I don't really
know
where the Danny Kaye hate is coming from here, but
we'll dive deeper into that for our White Christmas episode.
Ooh, I can't wait.
I can. Here's another. I'm not going to just rattle through them. I'll just say one more since we're here. I realize this about myself. I don't think I'm deep down a fan of 19 golden age of Hollywood musicals. Yeah. I really don't think I'm a fan of these sort of like old timey big numbers. And there's moments in this that I really, really liked. But there's certain times where like a song would start and I felt myself reaching for my phone.
You should go back and watch Singing in the Rain because that is like the
pinnacle.
I'm sure,
I
realized that and with this movie, I'm not really a fan of Judy Garland.
Really?
Yes! Oh, that's my next one!
There is some background bullshit that happened during the production of this film, so you can't... I wouldn't judge just by this.
What is that? Because I need to know.
So
I need an excuse for
Judy
this.
Judy Garland was married to the director, Vincent Minnelli. She had just had Liza Minnelli. Like, she was maybe 2 years old at this point. But they were on the outs already in 1947, 1948 when they were filming. And essentially, she was out, like, on all sorts of speed and uppers during the day and all sorts of downers to keep her asleep at night and would sometimes not show up for shooting days.
Frequently. According to IMDb trivia, she missed 99 of the 135 shooting days due to illness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, because I was going to say, this performance is chemically induced for sure. Like, and this is batshit
There was
crazy.
Also constant attention on her weight, so she was on all sorts of diet pills, and so her weight was fluctuating all the time. She was just completely out of it and had almost a nervous breakdown, or potentially a nervous breakdown, on set when they were doing one of the fire setups, and she just like thought she's like had a moment where she's like, "Oh God, they're going to try to kill me." So it was a wrought
Jesus Christ
production.
Yeah, Hollywood truly chewed up Judy Garland and spit her out. It is the degree to which that she was degraded and used like a piece of meat for almost the entire, basically the entirety of her career and therefore life is downright sickening. However, when this movie turns into like a broad comedy in the last act, I loved her.
Oh God, yeah.
Yes.
Best on-screen faint of all time. Where she just throws her head back
is
and
that the,
falls
Is that
down.
The one I sent?
Basically, from there on, I she's back, awesome. Yeah. The whole fight with her, where she just loses it and starts throwing shit at him.
That has to be a record for most broken, most thrown broken things, because I want to go back and actually count. If I do, I'll insert it here.
One of my film papers when I took the class on Vincent Minnelli was about that sequence in the film, just because it's just I couldn't stop laughing, and it's the easiest, slapstickiest scene, like straight out of farce, and it just works. And between
it's my single favorite line in the whole thing where he goes,
"I've never yet raised my hand against a woman, but by heaven, you've gone too far. On God!"
Then just a chair comes and like bashes him in the face.
Oh, that was great.
He goes, "Touché." Yes. Yeah.
That sequence, I because it's so long, I started to like view it through different lenses, and like the choreography of the chaos, it's really choreographed.
Yeah.
And she's really accurate with her throws, and he knows where each one is going in a way that, like, I don't know how no one got hurt. I mean, I'm sure someone got hurt, but, like, it is insane how many things worked out in a single, like, long take of all that destruction. It is crazy.
Yeah. I think something that still, I think, reverberates even on watching it now is the level of just technical synchronicity between all the members of people, like any dance sequence that's going on, of all the moving parts that have to work at the same time and have to be, you know, if you're off by a step, you're going to miss something and you're going to have to take it all over again. And they're long takes too. And just the how on the ball everyone has to be in order for that to work.
Which is why part of the reason I also found myself reaching for the phone during the musical sequences was because they had to cover that so boringly. One of the things that Singing in the Rain sort of takes this concept and sort of bumps it up to 11 is the way that they incorporate camera work into the precision of the dancing and the performances.
There's a moment or two where the camera work gets interesting. I think one of Gene Kelly's earliest numbers, or maybe the one where he's like sexually harassing every single woman down. Yeah. That one, I think he like climbs up to a second level balcony. The camera goes insane with him. He comes across, it comes back down. It's that was probably my 5 minute mark of like, okay, I agree.
The costumes in that scene, the whole set, the way the camera moves, the whole thing is near a oneer.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
His costumes for the entirety of the film are amazing. They're vibrant and just flamboyant, and it like every time he walks up in a new outfit
and really cling to his ass.
Yes, they do.
They knew what they were working with.
He's got a great ass,
and you got your head all the way up it. When I think of asses, something comes out of me.
The thing his costumes made me think of is, and this is probably a deep cut, I don't know, maybe not with you guys, but has anyone seen Zorro the Gay Blade?
I remember you telling me about this film, but I did not watch it.
So the plot it's a 1970s like Zorro sequel comedy spoof. It's like a Mel Brooksian kind of movie where George Hamilton is the son of Diego de la Vega, becomes the new Zorro and has to like, it's just a standard like Zorro movie, and then he gets hurt like halfway through it, and he has to get his flamboyant brother to take his place, who's his twin, and the brother just like changes the outfit and always makes it like he gives it, the hat like has fringe around the edges of it, and every outfit's a different like bright color. It's completely insane, and it made me think of just like the audacity of like the costuming for this time period is.
And I think that it informs partially the character of this is he is an actor pretending to be a pirate, not the other way around. The first draft of the script actually was Gene Kelly, like he was going to play Makoko and pretend to be an actor. But people were talking about it. It's like you can't have someone who like Gene Kelly be bad at acting and dancing and all that sort of stuff and like fumble through things, because then why are you even watching him?
Yeah. What's the point?
So then they fired the original writing team and hired a new group to do it the other way around.
Where does Makoko come from? How do they land on that?
Now we should probably take the people through the plot of this film, because there's no chance that anybody listening to this has any idea what's going on.
Real quick, before we do that, Matt, what's your origin story with this movie? I know you mentioned it before as a sexual awakening, which I appreciate, but I would like a few more details to fill it out.
So, 10, 11 years ago, I'm in undergrad. It's one of my first one or two film classes, like actual film classes I'm taking at Hunter. And it's essentially just the semester you're supposed to focus on a director's work. The professor we happen to have literally wrote the book on Vincent Minnelli. So we did an entire semester every week, 16 weeks, of Vincent Minnelli films.
Jesus Christ.
So I've probably seen more Vincent Minnelli films than any other director, just by virtue of that.
Damn it. That's awesome. I took the other class that was Cassavetes. We both went to Hunter, for anyone who doesn't know, and I got the short end of that stick.
Cassavetes was the short end of that stick?
I would rather do Minnelli, for sure.
Minnelli was a lot more fun, I can tell you that much.
Confounding.
Yeah. I'm not a Cassavetes hater, I just, of the two.
Interesting. We'll get back to that.
Yeah, sorry. So the other thing, too, is coming from my background, despite the fact that, like, my grandparents were very much into musicals, but growing up, we never watched them. My dad never took us to New York to go to Broadway shows, anything like that. So I just always thought, I probably don't really like musicals. And over the course of that semester, I learned to appreciate them a lot because we were studying how they're made and how complex they are and all that. And aside from the sexual awakening, the pirate stuck with me just by virtue of, like, just really just sequences once it goes into farce, like the voodoo scenes and all, like the statue breaking scene at the end. It always stayed with me, and I remembered it very fondly. So yeah, when I was firing from the hip to come up with a movie, this is one that I hadn't seen since then and wanted to revisit. So I had just bought the Blu-ray because I kept telling Katie about it, and she's like, oh, I want to see the movie that made Matt question his heterosexuality. So I was like, all right, let's do it. And so that's what brought us here now.
And again, before we get, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to have, I was prompting again to walk us through the plot, but if you have another question.
Well, I wanted to go around and just to sort of set the stage for how we're approaching our conversation. How did everybody feel about The Pirate?
I don't regret watching it, but I could take it or leave it, probably. It made me think of another movie that it's not my sexual awakening, but I had a similar sort of like nostalgia affection for, that's sort of in this genre that I'll probably have us cover at some point in the future. But The Court Jester, has anyone seen that? Speaking of Danny Kaye. Ooh, no one's seen that?
Seen the clips
okay,
from
but
it,
pin in that, there's like two or three people listening who are just like, yes, that's going to be it. So it made me think of kind of that, which is similar, but I'm sure there's a whole genre of these sort of like rom-commy, big budget musical numbers or whatnot. There's moments that worked pretty well. There's certain stuff that kind of I just really like and I kind of miss. One of them is the, and I hadn't seen this in so long, which is the like, storybook opening.
That's my very first note. I love like, a storybook opening.
Like what even would that be today? My the only thing I can think of is like some kid like unlocks his phone and that's the start to the movie. I don't know, but it's so beautiful and it's always on this like satiny velvet like piece of cloth. Like it's just, it's fun. I feel like maybe 2 out of 10 movies opened that way until like 1955.
I gotta say, I really enjoyed this movie. Again, the big musical numbers have my attention. Anything other than that, I am kind of grabbing for my phone. But the skill and the obvious execution of the big dance numbers really does make it worth it. I mean, it is really, really impressive. I was a little disappointed because my mindset was with the Pirates of Penzance when I started this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which
yeah.
Is near and dear to my heart. I did it in high school. I played the Pirate King. Not a big deal. I will say what I was most grateful for in this film is that they didn't put Judy Garland in brownface because they sure could have.
They're all, well, yeah.
They put her in brown name.
Well, that's the thing. Name, not face.
I mean, one other thing
for
to
1948.
Consider. One other thing to consider, too, is historically they are probably European Spaniards, so yeah. They're more liable to just be like north, you know, white-looking folk.
Aren't they in Spain for part of the movie?
No, they're still in the Caribbean.
Are you sure?
Yeah. They're in some like unnamed island in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Okay. So Peter's right. We should just bang
Connor
out the
still
plot
hasn't
quick.
Given his thoughts either.
I was gonna say after Connor's done.
This movie was not for me. I am just not designed for this film at all. It's just not.
I'm so glad I'm not alone over here.
It's one of those things. Like I can appreciate it from like a technical perspective. Like how much movie there is in this movie, but the story and the characters and all that just sort of bounce right off me like water off a duck's back. That said, the last 30 minutes when all the characters become humans and it's like it starts like to skew into screwball comedy is much
like
more
when the
my
movie
jam.
Starts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like once you get past like the theatrical, like, you know, oh, my life is over because I'm marrying this guy and him trying to woo her. When it's just them fighting in a room, that's much more my speed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically from the moment that Judy Garland faints.
Yeah.
Which, ladies and gentlemen.
And says, it is, oh, an actor?
It makes Marion Cotillard's death in Dark Knight Rises look Oscar worthy. Like that's the way I'm gonna put
no,
that.
It's an excellent faint. It's perfectly tuned for this particular movie.
We have
she falls.
We have to post this on the Instagram
we will.
Page.
Yeah,
yeah okay,
we will.
Good.
She falls faster than gravity. Like she falls like Philip Seymour Hoffman in Along Came Polly, like just instantly on the ground.
She
it's
looks
crazy.
Like she
basically throws her head back and just throws herself.
I was gonna say it looks like she's doing a headbang and just didn't catch herself.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay, I think I can hit the plot pretty succinctly so we can get back into the
good luck.
Just so everyone can kind of catch up. I think I can do it. I think I can do it. We have several characters. It's not terribly complicated. We have Judy Garland is a like highborn noble lady who's about to get married to a boring aristocrat guy. Classic. And she is longing for adventure. There is this acting troupe that comes to town in the Caribbean that the lead is Gene Kelly, who is basically just Gene Kellying all over everyone's chest throughout the whole town. He's just doing his thing. He immediately falls in love with Judy Garland from a distance, woos her, hypnotizes her into thinking. I'm realizing how complicated
I was
going to
say
gonna get as I'm going into the sense. He woos her into. She hypnotizes her in his act to try to get her to fall in love with him. She, under hypnosis, admits that she is in love with Mac the Black Makoko, who is in this movie's universe the like Dread Pirate Roberts, the fear.
And where's
like,
he from, Frank?
The high seas. Where is he from?
Is he from
know.
The Caribbean or the Caribbean Sea? The Caribbean no.
oh,
or the Caribbean Sea?
I have
sea?
A note about that.
It depends
on
whether they're singing
says,
the song or not.
If I may, so real quick, just so everyone understands, because there's so many fucking footnotes in this episode. There's a song where the lyric is like Caribbean or Caribbean. Like that whole sentence is a lyric to rhyme the different way of pronouncing it. Stupid, but in my
don't
book,
don't you do Cole Porter like that?
One of
that
my notes
Porter,
says
yes, it is.
Caribbean or Caribbean question mark. And the way I remembered to sort of say it different is one of them has two R's and one B, and the other one has two B's or like a two B's.
Do you
and
think
one
Cole
R.
Porter lost?
So
a bet
I don't know
where someone was like, "Hey, how do you pronounce this word?" And like there was a bar fight about it.
No, I think he was snorting cocaine and being like, "Guys, what's the dumbest thing you think I can get away with putting in a big budget song lyric?"
So the audiences of 1948 anyway, will just eat up like popcorn.
I'm gonna keep it going. It's definitely something that would keep up. But what's that song about the Istanbul is Constantinople or something like that? Yeah, same stupid thing. Okay, so she is in love with this legendary pirate who is a horrible, awful pirate, but she loves adventure, so she's
that they somehow have storybooks about.
Oh yeah,
they have storybooks about. Regardless, so then she snaps out of it and goes on her merry way. Gene Kelly runs into her. I'm kind of rushing through a couple pieces of this. Runs into her soon-to-be husband, fiance, recognizes him as the real Makoko, even though he's been pretending to be this like boring aristocrat guy, and Makoko's like terrified that he's going to be found out, so he'll do anything Gene Kelly says. And Gene Kelly pretends to be Makoko in the town, and pretends him being an actor is a ruse, so that Judy Garland will fall in love with him. She kind of does while this is happening. And Makoko gets mad that he's starting to lose his fiance to the person that he really is in Gene Kelly. And so he goes to like get the I almost said the commissioner.
The viceroy.
The viceroy. The only other movie I've ever heard the word viceroy in.
This is getting out of hand. Now there are two of them.
To arrest and hang Makoko because he's claiming to be Makoko. And then they have a big trial. Judy Garland figures it out that Gene Kelly's just pretending, figures out that Makoko is her fiance, tricks Makoko into admitting he's Makoko. He gets arrested. Judy Garland and Gene Kelly live well,
as clowns.
That's the basically the plot. As clown.
The other core thing is that when she's under hypnosis, she kind of reveals that she does have performance talent, and that's something that becomes a major thing. The end of the movie, she is a member of the troupe and doing, you know, part of the traveling group.
Yes. Which this is, and remember, this is at a time where actors were like basically gypsies. Like they were just like cast aside and like kind of like the low end of society where they would just be these like homeless people that would come to town. Kind of, you'd set them up in a corner to just...
It's the carnival.
Yeah, it is the carnival. That's much better. That's kind of the movie. Judy Garland is all over the map emotionally.
Depends on when they were shooting it, what she was on.
This might only be the third Judy Garland movie I've ever seen, honestly. So
my second.
The Clock, the one where she, I think it's another Minnelli.
You guys
I think
haven't
it's called
seen
the Clock.
Meet Me in St. Louis?
I haven't.
Ooh.
Yeah, I don't think I have.
That one's not on my list.
That's a classic.
Unconventional Christmas film one that I pick at some point. But anyway,
Isn't that word from where Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas comes from? Yeah.
And Judy's the one who sings it. Yeah. I mean, I completely understand it not resonating with certain people. I know the movie didn't even do terribly well when it opened. Like this was, they gave Vincent Minnelli like the keys of the kingdom to do whatever he wanted, but the production was hell. And after he was finished with it, the studio came in and re-edited stuff and added crap in, which is kind of why the first half of it is so long. Cause there was this concern about like the audience, again, it's the same old refrain of like, but the audience might not know how we got here.
Yeah, it's very inefficient, even for the 40s.
So I totally understand, but I'm really what you remember, at least what I remember, is like that second half of the film once we get into the fun stuff and the farce of it all.
There are moments that did get me where the reveal that her husband's Makoko legitimately caught me off guard.
Yeah, was not expecting
and
that.
Immediately I sat up. It is an unbelievably effective movie moment. I liked him as a character. I thought that was he was very nice and clearly the wrong guy kind of thing. But like that twist, suddenly I'm like, oh, I get what we're doing here. Like it took too long to get there. But once that happened, you're like, oh, I can kind of see the movie forming and 45 minutes.
And before to like fill time, Gene Kelly is like fucking Michael Myers trying to pursue Judy Garland.
Oh yeah,
he will not stop, and he's like honestly like pretty creepy and a little cringe. By the time we finally get to the movie, starting with the Makoko reveal.
Oh yeah, I think
I would have really loved for them to hammer home the whole like not only do I find this woman attractive, but I also see her as a meal ticket because she's talented. Yeah. Because I think that's part of what the angle that that's the angle that Gene Kelly is playing when he goes to get her in her hometown, but that sort of goes underrepresented.
I think the movie couldn't decide how much of a scoundrel Gene Kelly should be, how much of a piece of shit he really is, and the craziness of. This is the first moment I really started to like pull away from the movie was he has his first big dance number is crazy and it's so over the top. And he is singing about the fact that like he falls in love with every woman he sees basically, or maybe not really fall in love, it's just sort of like trying to, it's just pursuing. And it is like comical where he's like flirting with one, another one walks by, he goes to her, another one walks by, and it's a decent dance number. I did write, though, watching him dance, I felt like I was at some other kid's birthday party. Like, he is having the time of his life, and I'm just sitting there.
The one great moment of that number is the swallowing the cigarette thing that he does. That moment is worth preserving, at least.
Responsible for
that guy you met. That moment got you
probably,
too.
Probably, yeah. Now that I'm thinking about it,
yeah. Well, Gene Kelly does have this way of doing the impossible with this feeling of effortlessness. Mm-hmm. And that moment in particular, it's like, you know, he like in reality he had to practice that move over and over and over and over again to make sure like he did it safely and could get it back out of his mouth, you know, lit. But when he does it, it's just like, I do this all the time. This is like, it's a trick. Yeah. It's a trick I picked
up. Unbelievably charismatic. It really is.
The note that I made about the cigarette thing was that trick, I guarantee, burned 1,000 teenagers' mouths that tried to do the same thing.
Without a doubt.
Sure. But yeah, so he has this big dance number where the whole concept is, I am super flaky, I'll hit on anybody, I'll flirt with anybody. And then the next fucking scene, he sees Judy Garland from a distance the same way he saw all these other women and immediately pursues her. And in my head, I'm like, all right, is he doing an act? I just couldn't get on board with the fact that he legitimately fell in love with her, because like the movie wouldn't lean into he's horrible or he's great. It was this weird kind of middle ground with him that I think I always had trouble sort of latching onto. That was the trick of it.
I think that's part of the unevenness of the first half. I think, again, if there was a little bit less studio screw around, it might be a little bit different. But yeah, the one thing that I did appreciate was he does start off as like a complete cad, and then that does get deconstructed to a point by the end. Cause like even the sequence of him kind of orbiting Judy Garland on the steps gets reversed later on by Judy Garland doing the same thing to him after she realizes he's pretending to be Makoko, and like stuff like that, like leading up to the statue scene and all that. So like that, and he gets his ego does get deflated, you know, bit by bit over the course of the rest of the film.
Lots of Taming of the Shrew adjacent stuff going
in this
movie.
Yes,
it felt very Shakespearean. Like even like Rococo being Makoko as like a character turn felt very much out of like a Shakespeare play.
Yes. Almost a Prince and the Pauper thing too it. Just a little bit of that sort of like Mrs. Doubtfire, you know, like all of these sort of like Tootsie, like all
almost Tootsie. Yeah.
Speaking of orbiting somebody on the stairs, I have written in my notes, running in circles around a horse that is sitting on its ass.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yes.
It's clearly a statue of a horse, but that image where he sort of whirls around after fighting the security guards, and there's just a horse just sitting like a dog, like with his butt on the ground.
With his back to us, which made it worse.
With his back to the audience, just like staring in one direction, and Gene Kelly just starts menacing him with a club and running around in circles.
It's a weird choice.
Yes, it is.
This movie occasionally dips into the surreal.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when I got into
well,
it.
Well, that we have to talk about the sexual
into
fantasy.
The fire dance. Yeah.
Yeah, we have to talk about that sort of like weird what is that? I don't know what to say. She like fantasizes about him. He has burned a town to the ground. Is wearing like black tights and like kind of a mesh tank top you'd see at
he's
like a club.
Black
he's
short
wearing
shorts.
Like hot pants. Shorts.
He's wearing like booty shorts. Yeah.
With Gene Kelly.
I don't know what's happening.
I think I saw that same outfit as on a background dancer in a Lil Nas X video. Like that's the type of outfit we're talking about.
Yeah,
it's crazy. But I just miss the fake
theatricality
behind people in these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And so this is Vincent Minnelli came from Broadway. Like he was a set designer. And so that was one of the major things that was a focus of the course that I took was whatever he's doing with the camera is to him secondary to how he's creating his mise-en-scene of like, what is this painting or what is this stage going to look like? Which is why like...
Yeah. Well, and he... And he shoots it like he's shooting a play. Like it's like one half of the
Half of the set is the audience.
Yeah. Stage. Like it's like one side of the stage, the other side of the stage, just frame it like that and let shit happen.
Yeah. Which I think a lot of big sets from this era had a like open wall, like a fourth wall kind of feel to them. Even like Adventures Robin Hood had a ton of sets that definitely had that piece to it. We were always pointing in the same direction.
So funny enough, this movie was a play.
I heard that at least.
So in one of the fun facts here on IMDb, Vince Minnelli and Judy Garland vacation in New York City, saw the play, loved it. Judy Garland called up MGM and was like, hey, I want to make this movie. And MGM was like, great, we already own the rights. And then they just stayed in New York for like 2 weeks and just watched the play as many times as they could and took notes. And like,
that's funny.
Cribbed a lot of it from the actual play.
But it
got Hollywood during like the studio system where it was just like, we want to make this, great, do it.
Yeah,
must have been a magical place. Apart from all the lives it was constantly destroying.
Aside from all of that part, Peter, my question with that is, but the music, all that stuff came after. It wasn't a musical play, right?
Right. Okay. I think it was just a straight play. Okay. Yeah,
and that's when.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of Vincent Minnelli's blank check film. For better or worse.
Well, I was gonna ask, had he done or did he ever do other musicals? Is this his only musical?
Oh no, he did a number of musicals. He did the one that he met Judy Garland on was Meet Me in St. Louis in like 1944, 1945.
Okay, that is a full. All right,
but like I can't list them off of the top of my head at the moment. But yeah, he like that was what he was predominantly known for. Although he
An American in Paris, The Ziegfeld Follies,
yeah.
Was Gigi a musical?
Yes, thank heaven for little girls, which is another problematic song. but yeah, but he also did Lust for Life, which is the Vincent Van Gogh biopic with Kirk Douglas in the leading role, which also I remember fondly, but I don't
Kirk
know.
Kirk Douglas?
You would be surprised.
But he has 2 ears.
So he had established himself by this point, and MGM initially, at least for the production purposes, gave him kind of whatever he wanted to do with it. And it went, I think, up until another like 10, 20 years later, it was the most over budget musical that had been produced to that point. Because it went, I think, something like, I don't remember the figure, but it went a substantial amount over budget.
By the time they got through their budget, it cost almost as much as Gone with the Wind. But it
crazy.
But it lost MGM $2 million. Yeah.
This does not look exceptionally expensive. It's definitely a big budget, but like I didn't really blink an eye at.
But also,
the
you have to
production
think about
design.
How many wasted days there are. How many like?
Oh yeah.
That's what drove him over budget. Were the 99 days that Judy Garland didn't show up for shooting.
I watched an interview with one of the Nicholas brothers. So they're the guys that dance with Gene Kelly during the first Be a Clown sequence.
Ooh. I was wondering who those two were. I saw them in the credits.
He recounts a story where he like they all showed up at whatever call time was. And we're talking to somebody and we're like, oh, hey, you know, we're ready to go. And they're going, yeah, we're waiting for Judy. And he goes, okay, when's Judy going to show up? And the guy goes, don't hold your breath. And she never showed up that day. And they're like, okay, I guess we'll come back tomorrow. So like that there were 100 days like that.
So are you saying Judy Garland was the shark in Jaws?
So, well, the other part too is if ever you want to go back and rewatch the movie, there are a lot of shots of just Judy Garland isolated on the camera. Mm-hmm. Those are all pickups that they took at the end of production just to get them in so that they could use something in a scene because she wasn't there for the actual filming of the scene.
I have another positive because I feel like I'm being very negative to this movie and I don't mean to be because there's a lot to enjoy. So typically with a like 1940s ending, there aren't a ton of twists and turns. It isn't this crazy exciting sequence where there's a lot of like they try something, it fails, and the tension's rising or whatnot. I think of like a movie like the first Back to the Future, where they're trying to drive the DeLorean in the rainstorm, and suddenly the car doesn't start, and then they get it started, and then suddenly the wire comes undone. Like, basically the, like, cause and effect of all of these things and all these beats, and it really builds attention. Typically, movies in the 40s don't really have much of that. It'll be like, the ending kind of just plays out, is the term. And I'm watching it, and I'm watching the end, and the trial's happening, and Gene Kelly pulls out the hypnosis mirror that he used earlier on Judy Garland, and I'm like, oh, he's going to use that on Makoko, and Makoko's going to reveal himself. That's kind of clever. I like that they brought that back. So I'm watching it, and I'm like waiting for it to play out. And then Judy Garland's mom comes out of nowhere and smacks it out of his hand and breaks it, and suddenly my heart jumped, and I'm like, I don't know how you're getting out of this now. That really got me.
Yeah.
Very effective.
Turns out all they had to do was wait a few minutes for Makoko just to confess because it was time for the movie to be over.
Well, my note with that was when he pulls out the mirror, I wrote down, Judy Garland should have thought of that. That would have been good. And then they play that out and it breaks. And then Judy Garland comes up with the scheme to trick him. So she does get involved, which I was happy about.
Yeah, I think
about.
Playing that and then playing how they get out of it is fairly clever.
Perfect.
As well.
No notes. Solid ending. I do have a note on the choice of dance number that you end the movie on. Which
go on. About. We'll go on and then.
So basically, for those playing the home game, the movie ends, they embrace, and, you know, what happens is what's supposed to happen happens, where you fade to, I don't know, weeks, months later, and she's in the acting troupe, they're performing, and they get one last number together before everyone goes home for the day watching the movie. The number that they settle on is her and Gene Kelly singing about how great it is to be clowns, which is
a reprise.
Be a clown. It's a callback from earlier, yes. But they're wearing that, like, I don't know where it came from, but that, like, hobo clown.
Yeah, they're
look.
Commedia dell'arte. Yeah.
Yes, but it's 1600. So I don't really know where the collared shirt is. Do not have an explanation for this. Do not have an explanation.
He took a class in this movie, Frank.
It is vaudevillian craziness.
He's
Let me bring up my paper that I wrote.
Okay,
The reason for that is be a clown. Both the original and that at the ending sequence were tacked on at the last minute, and like the producers are like, we need to end on a high note, and made Cole Porter write a happy, funny song to end the show with. And so, like, that wasn't in any of the original versions of The Pirate.
It didn't have a number at the end?
I don't think it had that number. They might have tried to do, like, redo another one.
Something else.
But ultimately...
No, it should be an upbeat number, but that is so the wrong tone and vibe for
it.
I was cringing for them. It just looks... It's like a Marx Brothers routine. When the movie has not played that up at all, really.
Which, ironically, I think that was Judy Garland's favorite scene because she came from doing stuff like that when she was a kid with her family.
I think it's her best scene, for sure. She's the most...
Beautifully performed.
Yeah, she's the most in sync with what she's supposed to be doing.
And it's also, like, it's her and Gene Kelly getting to, do their thing together.
Yeah, just the two of them, no extras or anything. Yeah, yeah.
And she's, like, not encumbered by a big, like... whatever era this takes place in, gown, so she can actually dance and sing.
To give
Gene Kelly would later go on to dance to the song again and make him laugh.
So
and singing in the rain.
I was going
to
say that. So, which
I thought this movie was ripping that off because I misunderstood because I was in a production of Singing in the Rain and I used to know it backwards and forwards, but I for some reason thought it came out in like the very early, like 1940, as opposed to coming out in 1952, 4 years after this movie came out.
So to tell you how much Cole Porter actually cared about writing Be a Clown, when he saw Singing in the Rain and saw that they had blatantly ripped him off, and he was like, oh yeah, that's a copyright infringement. I'm not going to do anything about it. He did nothing. He didn't sue him. He didn't talk to him. He was like, yeah, you take it. I don't care.
I mean, to be honest, Make 'Em Laugh is a better version of the song.
100%.
Be a clown, be a clown. All the world loves a clown. Be a crazy.
buffoon.
And the demoiselle's a law smooth. Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? Ah, ah. My dad said be an actor, my son, but be a comical one.
So,
oh my God.
I have a favorite character that we haven't discussed yet.
Wait, can we guess?
Yes.
Is it the aunt's husband?
I think that's who it is, the thin guy with
it
the
might
purple
be.
Suit.
Yes.
He's always the smoking who, a cigar yep. and looks stoned and has no lines.
Yep.
That
yep.
guy yep. is doing Silent Bob before Silent Bob, and he looks way cooler doing it.
Yep.
He's that. I've seen other movies that have this character in it from this era.
Yeah.
This stereotype of a, and it's always wealthy people. It's always a wealthy woman and a wealthy man. Her husband is, she's the character with lines and scenes, and he's just kind of like, tethered to her, but like with a very like elasticy string where he'll just like catch up to her in the scene and she'll give him direction to go do something and he's like, oh sure honey, I'll go do that, and go like walk out.
But most yes. of the time he's smoking a cigar or drinking and just doesn't care.
Yeah.
Which
the word is bumbling yes. too. There's an energy to him that's a little bumbling if he was not so relaxed.
Aloof.
Aloof. That's better, yes. He is a delight, and it took me a while to even realize he was a character.
Yep.
I'll say this. He was so passive, I didn't even notice him. So
what?
At the beginning of the movie, best. I thought he was the servant of the guy trying to be the husband.
Oh, Don Pedro.
Yeah. That's still who I thought that was.
Yeah, no, he's got the vertebrae of Ichabod Crane. Like, he's just this...
He looks like he's having the best time, though. He looks stoned yeah. out of his mind, smoking a cigar.
But what's funny about that, too, I thought about this, too, because the plot is her aunt. It's her aunt, not her mom, right?
Her aunt, yeah.
It's her aunt and uncle. Okay. Yeah.
So her aunt is full-on the mom in Titanic. Our lives are terrible. We're women. You have to marry this guy. He's going to be safe. He'll support you, blah, blah, blah. All just anti-feminist everything. For this, it works perfectly.
Well,
for the
if I remember right at the beginning, too, she's like, you know, me and your uncle are poor as shit, and this might be our opportunity yep. to get some money. So,
oh, is that? I missed that. I did write down the line where she says to her, he's not marrying you to listen to you. that was great. But she is basically pushing this like loss of power agenda on Judy Garland, and she's restricting her. But she is this unbelievably empowered woman for her own right, where she has complete control over her husband and seems to be doing fairly well, even if she's poor. Like, she's in all the scenes and not dirty, so like clearly she's doing all right. But like,
I think the word is less yeah. rich,
less rich. But like, why would you give her a? Why wouldn't you have her be the example of what not to be, where if Judy Garland goes down this path, instead she's a baller who like has this ridiculous toy of a man on a string following her around, who's just a delight too. Like, it's great.
He's great.
It was funny.
I think it also just plays to ultimately she's still the antithesis of what Judy Garland's character wants. She wants to yeah. be anywhere yeah. but there, and she is going to be tied down to this one place and never leave.
Yeah, I did like Makoko's line at the very before you know he's Makoko. He has mentioned something about how he dislikes the sea. Uh-huh. That was a nice touch. I like legit like a unbelievably effective movie twist for this era. Like that
yeah.
completely caught me off guard. I didn't even
same.
I didn't even think Makoko was going to be a part of the movie.
Yeah, I had forgotten yeah. too between watchings.
It just needed to happen sooner, or not necessarily that, but like the second half needed to be the second two thirds.
Yeah,
the audience needed to know who Makoko was. I think a little earlier, like it, like if there's a little aside when he was getting ready to go in, be like, I've given up my ways, or I don't know.
Judy Garland has that opening where she's reading the story to her like Chiquita Banana friends. that I feel like they set him like it's basically Dread Pirate Robert.
Yeah.
So they kind of do that. I kind of thought Gene Kelly would be the pirate. So I kept being like, maybe he's Makoko in like the world of this movie. But yeah, That's all I could think. Because I kept getting confused by why it's called The Pirate.
Do you understand now?
Do you see?
I mean, I mean, there's a pirate. Am I overthinking it or underthinking it?
It's not my favorite title. Like, I feel like there's a better title for this movie somehow.
Yeah,
Mac the Black.
Like, honestly, they say it enough times.
Yeah, yeah. I the title doesn't bother me that much, but I mean, because ultimately, like, it's about the concept of a pirate, and at least one of the characters was a pirate at some point.
Yeah.
So it's kind of whatever, but I definitely think it is the problem that we've all been discussing of just, it's got this uneven, like, slow paced, weirdly paced first half.
Yeah.
That was, I would like to attribute to studio meddling, but you know, who knows?
It's probably so muddled. Yeah. But I'll say it's a great story. A okay plot is the way I'll put it.
Yeah.
Like, you could remake this and clean up and smooth the edges that are, you know, you could, there's a really great movie in here with not much changing the core concept of what's happening.
I kept thinking of Kevin Kline when I was watching.
Yeah. Well, you know why? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. But to
In and Out.
Yes. Yes. To watch Kevin Kline do this in like 1995. Ooh. With like, Holly Hunter, I don't know.
Annette Bening.
That would be good. Annette Bening in 95. What was she doing?
She was doing The American President. She was doing...
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Wait.
What?
Does this have something to do with Sidney Wade?
They say her name a million times. Wait, I can do this. Don't tell me her name in American President. They say it a million times in that movie, and it's three words. It's going to bother me if I don't do this right now, and the audience has to deal with it.
Sidney Allen Wayne.
It's you. You're. It's like they say it the whole movie. They always say three syllables. Oh, fuck me.
Sidney Allen Wade.
You got 5, 4, 3, 2. Sidney Allen Wade.
Ah, Sidney Allen Wade.
Just stay away from DuPont Circle. I hear it's murder this time of day.
Frank ran away.
Oh, God. That hurt. That one hurt.
But yeah,
Sorry, everybody. Hopefully we trimmed that down. That was a long time.
Ultimately, for me, I think once it jumps into the surreal stuff, once it jumps into just everything's picking up, we're actually getting into this story, really. Because that's the way that the second half of the movie goes, that's always what I remember, and I remember it still fondly. Mm-hmm. At least, like I said, for me, like, I definitely understand that it's got some problems, and it's by far not a perfect movie or a musical, but I think there's still some merit to it, as far as at least the technical achievements that take place in it, because you just don't see this shit anymore. Even on there are better musicals, that were released, but like, even on this level, it's like you just don't see this anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
And he is impressive. He really is impressive with a lot of the stuff he does. It's better than it's bad.
Yeah,
for sure.
Even beyond like the choreography and Gene Kelly's dancing, it's just like the way that all of the set pieces are built and just the costuming and all of that stuff. It's just, they're going completely, it's that, what in my head has just always been, like, when someone says it's a Technicolor film, like, this is one of the movies.
Yes.
This is what pops into my head, is like, they're going for vibrant colors, they're going for contrast, and it's just like, this is like one of the examples of that to me.
Yeah.
They're going to clash a bunch of colors that have no business being next to each other just because they can, which is absolutely stuff that they did in the Technicolor time.
But I mean, even stuff where it's like when Gene Kelly's, I think, first, when he's pretending to be Mac, but Judy Garland knows what's up, he's wearing that black, like, double breasted thing with the cape, but it's black with just this bright purple, and just
with the sash,
it's fucking perfect. Like, and like his, the all of that stuff is still to me top notch, and like it's a group of people that are at least on the production side on the top of their game,
for sure.
It's that old Hollywood magic where it was like,
were movies were just new enough that they would bring in influences from other mediums like theater and put on a big ass show.
Yeah.
Because they could afford it with like the best technicians in the world and like Gene Kelly, apart from being super charismatic, is like almost as much a technician as like the costume designer is, because the control that man has over his body, even when he's doing a high wire act, that's actually a great scene because the way he goes from being super confident, basically just walking across a wire. Like he's walking across the room to suddenly being like, oh shit, I might fall, is like, that's totally him playing that.
And I want to talk about the wire scene because I didn't go back and rewatch it, but something about his footing on that wire makes it seem like there's an effect.
In the Blu-ray
happening copy,
you can see the wires that are attached to him. Yeah.
Oh, really?
that you see that there, and there's like one or two other moments where you can see a wire. But I mean, it doesn't happen often. I think it's just because it was in broad daylight and the way they were shooting it. But yeah,
I 9 times out of 10 watching this movie, I would not have noticed. It was pretty good. And honestly, all his dance numbers, there's a lot of times with these older, movies where you can see the, like this cue is late, this cue's early, we're at a point now where like perfection is the norm with these sort of like dance numbers and like any sort of like bodily movement, but for this, like, I didn't see a single time Gene Kelly was late or early on a cue ever the whole movie. He pretty much was perfect. His steps were pretty much in sync. I was really impressed.
And like the way that he moves through a space by basically just sort of drawing a straight line between where he is and where he's going, and just either going over, under, around, like whatever object happens to be in his way. It's like early parkour.
Yeah.
It's incredibly impressive. He's what a guy. What a guy.
You really need to go
watch Singing in the Rain.
Yes.
Like, I am not a big old Hollywood musical guy, but Singing in the Rain
It still
makes me laugh out loud. Like, it's very funny.
I'm sure it's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's great.
And I would even say, like, even if this isn't, like, if the pirate didn't enrapture you or whatever, but, like, the idea of if there was anything about it visually that you appreciated, check out a couple of Vincent Minnelli's other better-known films, because, like, this is him when he's off.
As a Vincent Minnelli connoisseur, do you have any other recommendations? Like,
I mean,
ready
I
to
would
go?
Definitely recommend Meet Me in St. Louis, but to be that as a Christmas time film, Lust for Life is Vincent Minnelli trying to turn a live action film into a Van Gogh painting. So there are a lot of cool just imagery and color play going on in that movie. And that one's not a musical, so if you're not into musicals, you can watch that one and not have to worry about it. And then the one that's always close to me is An American Paris, which is also Gene Kelly. And just because that song that he sings, Home, is just always resonates with me, but also it's a fun, lighthearted musical.
Excellent. Thank you.
No, I what?
Yes, have some.
Like,
that was great. Any last notes, anybody? I have one, but because we found out about Judy Garland's troubles, I don't know if it's appropriate.
Probably not.
You can do no wrong. You're as right as a nightingale's song. You're the end of perfection of them all. You're the star. When you gaze in my direction, life is caviar.
No, Frank, say your Judy Garland thing.
We can put it in the stinger at the very end.
No wonder we thought crazy women were witches back then.
Jesus Christ.
She is absolutely batshit crazy.
That's not even cool.
If she was walking around, I'd be like, well, that needs to be burned. I don't know what we do with that energy.
She was on a lot of medication, Frank.
I did not know that. I was on medication when I wrote that, okay? So we're all... That cancels out. It's all fine.
Boombox.